Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
So I dropped probably about $150 of serious cash on San Francisco Giants World Series paraphernalia.
What kind of stuff? Like belt buckles?
No, I got a shirt that says tortures never felt so sweet or something.
Yeah, it's good.
A little World Series patch. The wife wanted a Giants World Series t-shirt, so
nice.
We went the ladies style.
Very
you know, because there's just something about the ladies style. That you know, like that Alyssa Milano style that
yeah.
She has that sports clothing line. That's hot.
It's good stuff.
I listen. There's nothing hotter than my wife wearing like you know Giants and Sharks stuff.
True.
I like that.
And when I say true, I don't mean your wife. I mean one's wife.
I understand. We're not going to come to fisticuffs.
No.
Okay. We're only a minute and a half in. We haven't even got to the good
we'll
stuff.
We'll let Parros and McLaren do that. They fought every game this year, I think. And tonight's fight was probably the worst of the lot. Not for lack of trying. It's just they threw a bunch of punches, no really good connections. I mean, it was a pretty good tactical fight. Both guys clearly...
One fight tonight and there were six last time they played. So a little anticlimactic. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We got three games.
Yeah.
And probably leading off, starting in that first game, we've got the news item of the week for the San Jose Sharks,
right.
Which is... the major and game misconduct penalty to Joe Thornton for, what do they call it, a rough?
A blindside hit,
and a two-game suspension to Jumbo Joe. You wrote a great post about it, dude. A lot of people weighed in on it. The Sharks seem to be of a unified opinion that the call was bogus. Dude, what's your take?
The problem I have isn't necessarily with this exact call. Obviously, there's a lot of contention over what constitutes a blindside hit. There was a lot of good comments in the thread. For those of you that don't read the blog post and just listen to the podcast, visit dudesonhockey.com and listen to some of those comments and weigh in. We get a lot of people weighing in with good thoughts after the podcast. And my problem isn't so much that it was a penalty or it was a suspension or it wasn't. It's just... you never know which it's going to be. There's no way to tell ahead of time. You know, there's a lot of guys apparently that said around the league, this shouldn't have even been a penalty. And then it's a 5-minute major game misconduct and a 2-game suspension. And I would say it was certainly not as bad as the Mike Richards hit on David Booth and Mike Richards got nothing. Although that was before the blindside rule came into effect. But still, you know, it's very difficult to tell what's going to happen. You know, with these kinds of things. And I guess that's really sort of my main beef with this whole situation. You know, it's just, to get these kinds of injuries or these kinds of hits out of the game, and I think people don't want to see guys targeting someone's head and a guy getting knocked out on the ice. I mean, it looked maybe like Perrone was knocked out. But the thing is, the players... and the coaches and the fans and everybody needs to be able to predict with some measure of accuracy, maybe not 100%, but 50% accuracy if this is an illegal or illegal hit.
Right.
And the thing is, nobody knows at any point in time. You know, Joe didn't know. The fans didn't know. Everybody was up in arms about it. Of course, the Blues fans thought it was a dirty hit. The Sharks fans didn't. The thing is, you know, there should be some sort of line where it's pretty obvious. Okay, this is what you can and can't do. And maybe sometimes it's going to seem bogus, but at least everybody knows what's going to happen next.
If Perron had hit Joe Thornton like that, and first of all, the impact, Perron would have bounced off and fallen down.
Probably.
Because I did enjoy Jumbo on the Tampa Bay broadcast where he said, you know, so you're 6'4 and Perron is how tall? And he goes, I don't know, 5'9". And they go, he's listed at 6 feet. And she goes, he just starts kind of chuckles to himself.
Right.
Like, I don't really, you know, there's no way, you know, he's six feet tall. If the hit had been reversed, we probably would be feeling on the opposite end of the spectrum. You're going to defend your player, right?
Sure, of course.
You're going to take the side of whatever your player, what side they were on of the hit.
Right.
So in this case, you know, there are a lot of issues, a lot of drama around it. The first was that people were kind of jumping on Perron and saying, he almost pulled a premier soccer type move and laid there.
Right. A little
so
extra.
That it could be called a major penalty and Joe would get out of the game. But then news starts to trickle out that Perron is having some concussion-like symptoms.
And missing games.
Right. So there's two things that have been kind of brought into question here. One, I guess the claims of embellishment were maybe a little bit unfair. But two, what were the Blues doing putting a player back out there that clearly appears to have been concussed on some level?
Right. That was one of my main points of the post that I wrote about it. Is it's like either Perron was faking or the Blues played really recklessly with his health. And it seems like now that we have some hindsight, it seems like that's the case. I mean, he only missed 1 minute of game time before his next, before his next shift. And if he got hit in a hard manner again later in the game, that concussion probably would have been, you know, a factor of 10 worse or much, much worse than that first one because, you know, your brain needs time to recover. And this, the
now, no one has called it a concussion officially. Now, we just want to be clear on that, but we are the symptoms of dizziness and headaches and neck pain, you know, sort of point to that, or maybe he just needs a nice gentle massage from John Davidson.
It's possible.
Blues president. So, I mean, dude, this is a tough one. It kind of, when I watched it the first time I saw it, I went, whoa, you know, I mean, that was a big hit.
He didn't see it coming.
It's not something you normally see from Joe. I think he was pissed that he was in the box in the first place. The Sharks are the most penalized team in the NHL. They do not react well to falling behind. They were behind in that game. Mm-hmm. So they started taking more and more penalties. Not a move we typically see from Joe. Certainly not one I think we're going to see again. But my question is, do you think Perron saw him at all?
No.
Was it because his head was down, or was it because Joe was at an angle that you could not be seen?
Well, the thing was, given where Perron was looking, it was an area where he could not have been seen. If it was a normal situation on the ice, Perron was looking sort of backwards, trying to collect a pass, basically the equivalent of having your head down in the neutral zone, and Joe trucked him. So the fact of the matter is both players actually have a little bit of responsibility here in this situation. Perron should be aware of what is going on around him.
He's not a rookie. He's a young player, but he's been in the league for a few years. You would think he would expect. He knows the penalty's winding down.
Right.
Joe's going to come out.
Or maybe he forgot and, you know, was it, and plus he got a pass in his skates. I mean, all these sort of different factors all come together, and maybe Joe should have, you know, let up a little bit. You know, still make contact, but not in the manner in which he did.
What do I got to do? I got to go to the store. I got to get milk. I got to get some filet mignon. And I, oh, here comes Joe.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, it could have been.
He was spacing out.
Yeah.
Well, he lost it.
I mean, Jamie Baker in a blog post on the Sharks website, he called it a suicide pass. And you can see how that happens. I mean, you see guys get trucked like this all the time, especially coming out of their own zone. And, you know, the famous RJ Umberger hit that Brian Campbell laid on him that one year
the
in the playoffs.
One and only hit he's ever made.
Right. But you see these kinds of hits, and the fact is, it's like both the problem is, for me, there's two major problems of this situation. One is that both players bear some measure of responsibility. We can argue endlessly about who bears more or less or whatever, or who's at fault and who's not. To me, both players bear some measure of responsibility in this situation. And the other is, no one can predict what's going to happen and what's right and what's wrong in this situation. So those two things lead to hits like this. Because, you know, you can say lack of respect, oh, when I was your age, the players all respected each other, which is probably BS. But the fact of the matter is that these guys are big, they're stronger than they ever were, they're wearing, you know, gear that protects them maybe too much, and you get guys that get rocked like this. And, you know, I think the league should set a standard and enforce it exactly to the letter every single time, so the players can predict what's going to happen, because this is the worst of all possible worlds. You're going to get some guys that get hurt and no one's going to get penalized, and then you're going to get guys that don't get hurt, and then players do get penalized, and no one can tell what they're allowed to do and what they're not. And that's the worst possible situation to me.
Clearly, in the NHL's mind, Joe committed a no-no. You know, in terms of the rule, I mean, here's the official reading of it. It's 24 words long. A lateral or blindside hit to an opponent where the head is targeted and or the principal point of contact is not permitted. Right. That's a blindside hit. And
there was an interesting...
It certainly was borderline.
Right.
And
it depends on what the definition of is.
I think the Sharks are claiming you have to take size into account here, and I think you certainly do. You know, Perron, you know, his shoulder hit his head, and that's right. Because that's where his head hits, Joe's shoulder.
Right.
So how is Joe supposed to help that? Is he not supposed to touch a shorter player?
Right.
Sorry. Douglas Murray, I'm sorry. You cannot hit anyone who is smaller than you.
Right.
Is that what's going to start happening? It's a tough case. This was borderline, I'd say. I think we've talked about it enough.
Yeah, I think so. Let's talk about the wonderful poor showing of the Sharks tonight. Is that what we really want to move to?
Let's start on a more positive note and talk about the loss in St. Louis.
Oh, way better.
Well, it might have been a little bit better. You know, well, actually, probably not.
Blues are the hottest team in the league.
Niemi celebrated getting his Stanley Cup ring before the game by... dropping a 2-0 result.
Yeah.
Although it was probably his best performance in the last few weeks. He seemed to be in position. He held his ground. He made some big saves. But in the end, you know, an L is an L. You know, the Pavelski close center line again continues to kind of struggle, though Setoguchi busted out of that a little bit tonight.
Right.
The other two not so much. But Pavelski is firing and firing and firing pucks that he cannot buy a goal right now.
I feel like that's the way with Seto, too. I feel like the last 5 or 6 games, he's had dynamite chances and hasn't buried a single one of them. Tonight, he finally got one. A good second effort. You know, a puck came to him and he fired it, made the save, came right back to him and he fired it again, almost in the same place, even faster, and it finally went in. And you could really sort of see the relief in his celebration. He finally got on the board because... You know, at this point, you're starting to think, okay, this isn't just being snake bit anymore. This is starting to become, okay, a guy's got the yips.
This is your new MO, right? Yeah. Do you think he could switch positions like the baseball player, Rick Ankiel, instead of being, all of a sudden, Seto's a goalie?
That'd be cool.
And then the Sharks send him to Europe because they've got so many.
Yeah, that could happen.
Welcome to Stockton, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so the Blues game was just ridiculous. I mean, it got out of hand. The Blues are the best defensive hockey team in the league right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and a
with
lot
of
that...
one of the best goalies.
Yeah. Well, Halak, I think we talked about this on the phone. You know, it's really a shame that the Sharks weren't able to pull that off.
Yeah.
Now, the price was extremely high.
Right.
And, you know, much higher than the Sharks had to pay for the two goalies because all they put out was money. And Montreal got, you know, two high-end prospects and I think a pick.
Mm-hmm.
But Halak sure has turned that team around from a young team trying to find an identity to they've got an identity. And they're a defensive hockey team with a good goalie. Blues are dangerous. Not a team you're going to want to play in the playoffs.
Certainly not.
So, and they've got a boatload of cap room, dude. And that's a team that you could really watch and see, are they going to add a huge piece down the road? You know, they could pluck some things away from a sinking ship like New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could see like a Patrick Elias ending up over there or someone else, you know, who could really make an impact. 5-on-3s like in that game and over again. It just was a memory best served to be forgotten. So let's talk about the win against Tampa Bay, a 5-2 win. Couture playing on the top line, dude. What are your impressions?
You look great. I mean, the kid is going to be a damn good hockey player. There's no question about it. Now, of course, being surrounded by Danny Heatley and Patrick Marleau never hurts, but he certainly doesn't have the ability to distribute the way Joe does. I mean, it's pretty obvious the difference between those two players, but he certainly didn't look out of place. He certainly had some good shots. He had a goal. You know, Marleau and Heatley didn't seem to miss a beat, and they definitely had some points. So Couture was doing something right. I mean, if you just have an anchor on your line, you got one guy on your line that's not doing anything, then you're not really going to score. And so certainly Couture was helping out in that regard. And they made what I thought was a really good Tampa team. I still think they're a really good team and extremely dangerous. They made them look bad.
Especially in the second period.
Really bad.
And they Smith made some big saves. I mean,
he did.
He stoned Seto one time. I mean, he definitely was coming up big. I mean, that game could have gotten a lot more out of hand than it did. The defense of Tampa didn't really look very good.
No.
In their own zone. You know, not very effective at all. And, you know, they scored a late goal. Stamkos scored a late power play goal. So really, I mean, it was 5-1 for the majority of that game.
And probably could have been worse. I my phone was actually working at some point during the tank, and I was reading some tweets, and there was a Tampa Bay guy that I was reading his tweets. I think he might have been the beat writer, or certainly he tweets on Tampa Bay, and he said this game probably should have been 5-1 in the first period.
Right.
And, you know, it was Smith that kept the game alive for Tampa at all. And, you know, eventually it wasn't alive for them, but... let's talk about Stamkos. I mean, did you watch that game all the way through?
Yeah, I did.
There is no question in my mind at this point that now that Joe Sakic has retired, the best wrist shot in hockey belongs to Steven Stamkos. It is unreal. Release.
He's ridiculously dangerous and will lead the NHL in goals for many years.
Right.
You know, I mean, the guy is. I think they compared his shot to Brett Hull's, like on the telecast. He's got a great shot.
A great shot.
Really deadly. And that team is set up. I mean, the way the Tampa Bay team is built, they are set up to have some great years, you know, coming up. If they can continue to build around a star player like that, you know, we could see that Tampa team kind of go on a Pittsburgh type run, you know, at some point. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see that Crosby Stamkos battle if, you know, Washington folds like they normally do, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, is it going to be Tampa and Pittsburgh at the end? It wouldn't be too shocking. Some other things that stood out to me in that Tampa game: I love that Jamie McGinn beat the snot out of Ryan Malone.
Yes, he
after
did.
He hit Torrey Mitchell.
Yeah,
like, and Malone looks stunned.
Yeah,
and Malone has been in many NHL fights,
and he is a much bigger person than Jamie McGinn is.
And McGinn beat him up,
just went after him like a bulldog.
Yeah,
and beat the big
great.
Dog. It was pretty sweet. I mean, it was obvious during that fight. I'm like, wow, Malone is a lot bigger than Jamie McGinn, and Jamie McGinn didn't care.
No, he didn't care at all, and it just kind of solidified for me that Jamie McGinn is a legitimate NHL player, and maybe he's not gonna be a top six winger. You know, he's finding his role as an energy third line type player, and if he can continue to mold that identity, you know, he could be what we wanted someone like Travis Moen to be for this team, who has a little bit of toughness. He'll throw the body around. He's got a scoring touch. They don't let him play the kill, which I still don't totally understand, because I guess it's because I haven't seen it. There must be something about his game that they don't like.
Right.
On the kill, but I like that moment from Jamie McGinn. So when Joe comes back, what happens to Couture? Does he drop back down to the third line?
I think so, because the Joe Marlowe Heatley combination is so good, has been so good. It's been the standby. I think they have to keep with it, because that second line is just not producing.
So you take Couture and his productivity back down to the third line, where, you know, he just gets less opportunities.
Well,
I mean, hasn't he proven that he should be playing 18 plus minutes a night?
Or you put him on the wing and put Seto down, because Seto is, you know, I think Seto's the one where it's really hard to decide where he's at.
Right.
And actually, I just wanted to say one thing about Jamie McGinn before we move on to that, is that my working theory of Jamie McGinn right now is he is a smaller, faster Jamal Mayers. He is tenacious. He hits everything that he can. You know, the guy does not give up. You see him stopping and starting. You hear coaches talk about stopping and starting. When you make circles on the ice, it slows you down overall. It's actually much quicker to get from place to place if you actually hockey stop, turn, and go. But it's so much harder and more tiring to do that. And Jamie McGinn never misses an opportunity to stop and start. The guy he's got a motor that doesn't quit.
Right.
And he could turn into that Jamal Mayers. In another year or two, if he continues to develop his game, he'll be that penalty killer you just talked about. That's what I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sign me up, dude.
Yeah.
Get me a Jamie McGinn jersey.
Okay.
Oh,
Or not?
No. I'm just thinking about how much money I spent on the Giants. Like, if the Sharks win the Stanley Cup,
yes. Right,
and when they do, and we will be here to see it.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you about it after it happens.
We will.
How much serious cash are you going to drop, like, that day, that night?
Yeah. I'll buy, like, a Sharks car.
Like, I was so excited when the Giants won the World Series, and it probably was about a 10% as much as excited as I'll be if the Sharks win the
Stanley Cup. So you're going to spend $1,500 if the Sharks win, if that's the logic.
I think, as big of a Giants fan as this may sound ridiculous to some people, I was more excited storming through the streets after beating the Red Wings.
Yeah.
Like, that was euphoria.
Yes,
like,
it was.
And then, you know, we went out. We almost got, you know, beat up at a bar. Then, you know, we were out for a while that night. And then after the Giants won the World Series, I ended up here talking about the Sharks. You know, so I guess that kind of shows where it all falls into line for me. Dude, you know, you told me right before we started talking tonight.
I said something I didn't expect to say this early in the season.
You said, dude, I think I'm getting worried.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to feel that now.
Now,
the Sharks are a 500 team right now.
I'm a licensed and trained therapist.
Oh, cool.
All right. So I want you to just sit back on the hockey couch.
I will.
And tell me your troubles. And I'm going to make you feel better.
Dude, I'm
tell me about your mother.
Whoa. It's that kind of
person? Oh, I don't. Well, I mean, that's where all hockey problems start.
You're probably right. I'm just worried they're not executing this. I mean, they looked terrible in the first two periods tonight. They looked like they didn't care. They looked like they did not care. I mean, that last Anaheim game was so full of fire, and there were fights, and there were goals, and the Sharks were kicking the crap out of them, and it was awesome. And tonight, it looks like they didn't even really feel like playing. It was like, there was 10 shots total in the first period. It was the most boring period of hockey this season for the Sharks. And it looked like no one was even really trying. Up until the Sharks were down and had a couple power plays in the third period, it looked like they were playing like a good two levels down from their normal speed and intensity.
And I can understand you, because Tuesday night's Glee is on. So it's difficult to get motivated to play some sort of athletic event. Which
I'd forgotten
home
about
Glee.
That.
So that could have been the problem. All right. So now you're relaxed, dude. You're on the hockey couch, dude. Let me talk you through some of your issues. All right. Some of your issues, dude.
All right.
The Sharks are currently, before tonight's game, they were 26th in the league in even strength scoring. All right.
Great.
Last year, conference finalist, 5th in the NHL in even strength scoring, dude. That is one of your big problems.
That's the problem.
That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
That's a drop of, you know, that's 21 places.
Right.
You know, you're not scoring even strength. Now, of course, as we say this, they scored twice tonight, even strength.
Right.
But one game doesn't fix the problem. Big difference between being 5th in the NHL and 26th. They're not making it happen, even strength. We've been talking about it. We've been noticing it. And now I want to get into problem number two, dude.
Okay.
This is, I'm analyzing you, dude. And then we'll get to the medication, because I definitely think you need it.
Sweet.
All right. The Sharks are not getting goals from their blue line. And this is the whole function of the McClellan system.
Yeah.
I mean, remember when Blake came and McClellan came together, you know, and those first few games where, you know, Blake is just bombing away, and we're like, this is amazing.
This,
you know,
is awesome.
We got Boyle and Blake up on the point. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, last year the Sharks had 37 goals from their D. This year, at their current rate, I'd project them to have 10.3.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so far off.
Right.
The pace, getting production, the offense comes from the point, firing pucks at the net, a big part of their success last year. Did you ever think you'd say you miss Rob Blake that much? This much? We miss him a lot.
Yes,
dude.
We do. We need him bad. And
we need, is it too late?
It's too late.
It's too late
for Rob Blake.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, isn't he like redesigning the All-Star game or something? I'm reading about this. He's like in the conversation.
Let's call him.
Skype. Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, okay, not, maybe not literally Rob Blake, but This is a problem. And no one has replaced or even really attempted to replace that shot on the point. No one has been able to deliver, dude. It's the Detroit model. Last year, Detroit had 35 goals from the point. Mm-hmm. Sharks had 37. This year, Detroit has 8. We have 2.
Right.
Detroit's winning.
Yeah.
We suck. There's a problem.
Right, right.
How do we fix this, dude?
And now that you mention it, you know, that one particular thing and the one amazing skill that Rob Blake had was the ability to shoot the puck through traffic and still hit the net. And, you know, Douglas Murray, God bless him, does not have that skill, not even close. I mean, he shoots the puck 10 feet wide on purpose, which I can understand because the worst thing to do is to knock it off the guy's shin pads and then have a breakaway going the other way. So I understand him wanting to make the safe play, but Rob Blake had the ability to get that puck on net through traffic, and there's goals that come of that. If you shoot the puck 10 feet wide of the net, it's a completely different kind of play, and these guys are reacting in front of the net. They have to go to the corner to pick it out. So, and you know, Boyle, I love Boyle too, but that's not his primary skill either, is to get the puck through traffic on net hard and low. That's what Rob Blake could do, and nobody else can do it. And Jason Demers isn't doing it either. Mm-hmm. And you know, now that we have Marc-Edouard Vlasic and even Nicholas Faulin sometimes playing the power play.
Not exactly skills you'd have listed on their player card.
I mean, Faulin can shoot the puck pretty hard, but neither of those guys have anywhere close. I mean, you put all of those guys together and they don't have Rob Blake's skill in that department. So
Dan Boyle is shooting a lot more than he was last year, and he's actually sixth in the NHL in defenseman in shots before tonight. You know, so he's feeling that pressure
to
have to deliver. And Boyle's a smart hockey player. He knows what he doesn't have up there with him anymore.
Right.
He doesn't have the guy who he can feed the puck and bomb away from the point.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? I mean,
Sheldon Surrey.
Well,
I'm only half kidding. Before I'd be kidding. Now I'm only half kidding.
Well, didn't he break his hand in the AHL? I mean, the guy is a...
I don't care. Bring him out here.
Won him with one hand?
Sure.
The Randy Moss of hockey.
Just tape his hand to
him. Bring him on here. The guy can't... He's been banished. He doesn't... No one even wants him.
Yeah.
An interesting solution, not what I was thinking. I don't even necessarily have a name, dude. I just think... We've been over and over in it.
Right.
I'm sure
there's no reason
the listeners know where we're going.
Yeah.
We need another defenseman. And, you know, I've been torn between a puck mover and a defenseman with a shot and a stay at home. It's clearer and almost crystal clear to me now.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be an offensive minded guy.
Yeah.
It really needs to be. It's sorely missing. And until it gets addressed, I'm not sure, because I watched the Dallas Stars play some hockey this week.
Right.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, way, way better than I thought they would be.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I thought they were going to be bad.
They're getting some decent goaltending. Their defensive unit is playing together. They're hitting people. They move the puck effectively. And their top two lines are very entertaining. And Louis Erickson, my God, that guy is a good hockey player.
Yeah.
And you know, they've got James Neal. Richards is playing great. That big wiener Mike Ribeiro is playing well. Brendan Morrow's having a good
Brendan
start
Morrow's
to the season.
Playing great.
The Dallas Stars are way better than I think we gave them credit for.
Yeah.
Now the Ducks, who looked like a joke 2 weeks ago, won 4 in a row.
Yeah.
And Phoenix is not really playing well. And they look a little bit discombobulated.
Yeah, they
from
do.
What I've seen of them
I think
this
they
last
lost,
week.
They lost tonight to Detroit.
Yeah.
With a Nicholas Lidstrom shot from the point that had eyes and found the back of the net. Exactly. When I saw that shot, I said, we haven't had a goal like that all year.
Ah, no.
And we haven't. And Nicholas Lidstrom won the game for them tonight on a shot like that.
We don't really have anyone besides Boyle who's willing to take that shot.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is going to pass first. And then the LA Kings are in first place.
Yeah.
And the Sharks have to be careful. I know it's early, but you don't want to put yourself in a position where, you know, the Kings are already 6 or 8 points ahead of the Sharks.
Right.
You know, you don't want to find yourself in mid-December 15 points behind going, oh my God, you know, I've got a lot of ground to make up. We said this too at the beginning. We don't care if we win the Pacific Division. I'm sick of looking at the Pacific Division champion banner.
Yeah. Right.
Western Conference finalist banner. Best tacos in the NHL banner. You know, I'm just tired of that. You know, it's about how you finish the season and the team that's on the ice in March after the deadline, dude.
Yeah.
But it's pretty clear to me of who and where the shopping needs to start. It is an offensive defenseman. Go get it.
Well, dude, we got Islanders and Calgary, and what's the game on Monday? Let me look at my...
Monday is the Kings, I believe.
Look at my snazzy dudes on hockey wallpaper on my computer so I can see who we're playing.
Oh, Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado on Monday. Yeah, so,
great.
Yeah, so we got Islanders, Calgary, and Colorado. Yeah, I mean...
You know, two... average, below average teams,
yeah.
And Colorado is always a tough fight.
Right.
The game on Thursday against the Islanders, the player I'd like the dudes on hockey listeners to watch is James Wisniewski.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look. You know, this is a guy who might be available
right
in the coming months, and he's not afraid to shoot the puck. He's got a bit of a mean streak. He loves an obscene gesture.
Yeah.
And the guy,
I think he went to mime school,
is pretty effective in both ends of the ice.
Yep.
Now, I think the Islanders traded about a third round pick for him. They'd want something in return. But the Sharks have been linked to this guy before. We've mm-hmm. heard Wisniewski and the Sharks tied together when he was traded from Chicago to Anaheim. And we heard that Wilson had interest in him. I think it was at last year's deadline also. Mm-hmm. And they wasn't able to make it happen. So, dude,
yeah,
do me a favor. Take a look at James Wisniewski.
I will.
Let's discuss him with a little bit of a scouting report. Watch him be a minus four. Yeah. Watch him be just terrible.
You're just awful.
Yeah. Maybe he won't even show up.
Or make another gesture of some sort at somebody in the stands. Well, I think that's pretty much it for this week. You know, dude, I got to say, you made me feel a little bit better.
I did.
With me,
I didn't even give you your prescription for your medication.
Well, hopefully that comes after the show, and then I can go fill it at the 24-hour pharmacy down the street, and I'll be feeling nice and happy, in about an hour and a half from now.
All right, please take two Kit Kats and call me in the morning.
Nice.
It's leftover Halloween candy.
All right, well, dude, I think that's it for this week. We'll be back again next week, same time, same place. Thanks for listening, everybody, and talk to you then.
Go Sharks!
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.